Richie Neal, chairman of Ways and Means, one of the great guys in the Congress. Personally, I find him to be a remarkable man. So, Donald Trump, let's talk about him for a moment. They are trying, I believe, to rob the election, the next election, the very thing that he's always talked about not doing. He is trying to rob it. They're changing the laws in all of these states so that the Republicans can win. I'm scared to death about it. Is it possible that they're going to succeed?
Well, I think that we have to keep an eye on it, that's for sure. I think that two of the major pieces of legislation in Congress, including the John Lewis Act, would go a long way toward tamping down what they're trying to do. But at the same time, it's also a cult that follows this argument from the former president that he won the election. There is no evidence that he won the last election. And in fact, the margins that cost Hillary Clinton the election were the margins that gave Joe Biden the election. And the American people, even though Clinton got 4 million more votes than Trump did in 2016, we accepted the outcome. And I think that good sense here would insist on the former president accepting the outcome. He has promoted this idea, this obsession, that somehow that the election was stolen from him, where there is not any evidence that points in that direction. And I don't think that we can be just dismissive of what he said. I think we have to keep an eye on it, because when you consider now that between half and two-thirds of the Republican voters in America believe him, we should all be distressed by that statistical data. Now, the Wall Street Journal, to their credit, on the editorial page, which has been no friend of Joe Biden or Democrats by and large, they have taken to pointing out that he lost the election. And I think that responsible journalism ought to challenge his assertions that he won the election and to point out to the American people that he lost the election decisively. He got beat by almost 7.5 million votes. And to portray this as some sort of broad-based conspiracy that cost him the election is absolute nonsense. And for some members of Congress to say that January 6th looked like a regular tourist day at the Capitol, let me tell you, I was trapped in the Capitol. It was not a regular tourist day. And in addition to which, I've talked to Republicans privately who express outrage at what he's doing, but they're afraid of Republican primaries because they're being challenged. Sure. As the example in Oklahoma, where you have a reliable conservative Baptist minister, a senator, who is now being challenged from the right because he certified the election of Joe Biden. And I just want to say something about democracy that I think is really important, Alan, as well. After sure. all that turmoil on January 6th, windows broken, doors shattered, my door almost broken down, guarded by a Capitol cop who had his gun drawn on the door, and for us in that moment to march back into that chamber in the House of Representatives at 3:30 in the morning and declare Joe Biden the winner of the election was a very important, if underreported, part of what happened on January 6th. We certified the election of Joe Biden. I believe 146 of the Republicans refused to accept that. I mean, that is dangerous to our democracy.
How dangerous? Is it dangerous enough so that we really do face the fall of democracy because of what Trump is doing and saying?
Well, I think that the danger comes from the fact that, let's just speculate and offer this wild analysis, but what would we have done if that were a Republican majority in the House of Representatives? That's the problem. And those Republicans that had the courage to stand up and to say, no, this is mistaken policy. This is about the tenets of representative democracy. And for those to say, well, I'm afraid of a Republican primary, so I'm going to reject the outcome of the election that was well acknowledged. There's a terrific story that I was reading over the weekend about Rupert Murdoch when he made the decision, apparently personally, to call the result in Arizona. And he used a pretty vigorous diatribe to challenge what then-President Trump was saying. And I think that those are the obligations that we have to stand up for the institutions of democracy. And if that means standing up against the personalities that would challenge it, we need to do that simultaneously.
Richie Neal, in New York, Governor Cuomo has declared gun violence a public health emergency. Is there anything going on in Congress that we should know about?
Well, as you know, that there are resistant forces in Congress that have been even since the deaths of President Kennedy and Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy and assassination attempts that have taken place as well. There has been a well-organized effort to oppose any sort of restrictions. It's beyond me why we don't do mental health background checks, why we can't make sure that criminals can't get guns. But also there's an acceptance of a certain a part of our culture. I think it's manifest destiny and rugged individualism and all of that, that says that people that want to own guns can own them. And the argument that I would have in response is none of us who have favored stricter gun measures, none of us have ever said we wanted to jeopardize the collector or the hunter or the individual who was doing legitimate things with guns. It's the underground market. And when you consider that 2 weeks ago in Chicago, there were 100 shootings over the weekend. And when you consider that there have been shootings now in Times Square, you wonder after the awful events in Connecticut a few years ago, you wonder what it really will take to have people come around to say, look, there are reasonable things that we can do here to cut down on the gun violence in America. Why not do them?
Yep. So, a Republican, three Democrats so far are running for governor of Massachusetts. Do you think Governor Baker will run for a third term? Get out your crystal ball, Richie Neal. Could he win again? And what do you think?
Well, I think he's very popular. I don't think there's much question about that. I think in the last election, I use a pretty important example. I say this tongue-in-cheek with some humor, but it's true. You'd have trouble finding a Republican in the city of Springfield. And he won Springfield by 2,600 votes. The last Republican in a gubernatorial race to win Springfield was Frank Hatch against Ed King back in, I believe, 1978. So it's clear that in the state he has a pretty good hold on independent voters, who now, by the way, in the 495 Beltway and suburbs, they determine the outcome of these elections. And they move from election to election. They are not riven by ideology. They tend to be fairly socially liberal, fiscally more conservative. And I think that the governor has caught that mood. But at the same time, we have a long history in Massachusetts of voting for Republican governors. They
Absolutely.
All, again, they tend to be socially liberal, again, and fiscally conservative. And I think the other part of it is that for us, those individuals, candidates, they've all who have been successful on the Republican side, they generally run against the legislature. And that has been part of the path that they've had that has made them successful. So I think that the conversations I've had with him, he returns those calls promptly. I know that here in the Valley, he's here frequently. In fact, I'm scheduled to talk with him in the next day or so about a series of issues. And he met with the congressional delegation in Washington recently. I must tell you, the conversation could not have gone any better. Everybody was polite. He answered questions. And for all those Democrats to be sitting there with a Republican governor, we put the good of the state in the front of us.
Well, Richie Neal, you are the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, an incredibly powerful position. He's got to know that when he talks to you, doesn't he?
Well, I can tell you this. Of that $1.9 trillion that we put together in the president's rescue package, the Ways and Means Committee was responsible for $1 trillion of it. And when the speaker had that responsibility, she turned it over to me. I guided that through the Congress. I talked to the governor. The president called me when it passed the House. He couldn't have been any happier. And if you recall, a couple of days before that, I had outlined exactly what the state of Massachusetts was going to receive. It's about $8.5 billion. Our school systems are going to benefit. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I'm very proud of the fact that I guided that legislation through the Ways and Means Committee, then through the House, to the president's desk for signature, and the Senate pretty much accepted what we did in the House. And I informed Governor Baker as to how that allocation was going to come about, and I think that he was pretty pleased with it.
So, Richie Neal, the IRS will be issuing advance payments of the child tax credits. What does this mean? What does it mean for us in this district?
You will always hear the term transformational. This really is transformational. On Thursday of this week, the first checks will begin to make their way in terms of transfer. and these checks will begin to show up in checking accounts and bank statements. And I think that when you look at the data on this, it's extraordinary what's about to happen. And I'm not sure everybody understands yet what's coming, but I oversaw the child credit expansion and extension, and it tends to be my priority. I do want to make it permanent. I've talked to the president about this. Tackling childhood poverty in America should be our paramount consideration when it comes to economic policy. If you want to address the cycle of poverty in America, let's start with making sure that children have the sustenance of life that they need.
And just for those folks who are listening who have no idea what we're talking about, what is the child tax credit?
The child credit essentially says that you will receive a direct payment of between $250 to $300 per month for children under 6, and then from 6 to, I believe, 17. There will continue a smaller supplement, but it's going to be there. And just about every American family is going to benefit from this. And when I told President Biden in the Oval Office that I was putting this in, and he said, I'm going to support you, I got to tell you, I thought, this is a moment where you remind people your vote really counts.
One more point, and then I'm going to let you go because I know how busy you are. We're at a place in the country where things are very polarized. Is there any way out?
I think that there is a way out if we could lower our voices long enough to understand that there are some of those that remain deeply committed to the institutions of American public life and resistant to emotional pitches when they're not based on fact. And I think that we continue to try to find, as Mr. Lincoln said, the better angels of our nature.
I want to thank you for being my congressman. That's all I can say about that. And Richie Neal, we hope that we can continue these conversations. You are terrific. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Alan. All the best.